blue ribbon people to put on the boards. I just didn't want to do it, you know. So he had to finally put a lot of political hacks on anyway in some of these boards. In the second play, the day Earl Long took office as governor, he fired everyone on those boards.
In the second play?
Yeah. They said he couldn't do it. They said it was unconstitutional, but nobody ever took him to court because he got the legislature to address him out of office. See, the legislature can address, in Louisiana, can address out of office. That's potentially the most powerful tool they have. The legislature can address any official out of office in Louisiana except the governor. They have to impeach him. But they can address by just a straight, what is it, two-thirds vote? Straight, huh? Maybe straight majority, I don't know. But it's never been used except for the dress out of the blue ribbon board. So what Earl did was ask them all to send their resignation to him. If they didn't, he's going to have the legislature dress them out. And that's exactly what happened. So every governor since then has done the same thing. And we still have so-called blue ribbon boards, but they're controlled by totally by the governor. The highway board's this way, but the governor controls it. So it never worked in that sense. You know, the sense of having to remove those functions from the power of the governors never worked.
How about the other governor?
Then Earl came back. Then McKithen. He's really a caretaker. He said the only the people put it, you know, he just wanted, it was an ego trip to get back in again. And he had so many, he was a very shrewd political figure. I think he's much underrated in terms of his political ability because he was such, you know, he was a hillbilly singer. I won't assume you're an entertainer, you don't know much about politics, but I think he was a very shrewd political figure. Such a collection of bums around him. He went out, when his administration ended, it was in great disfavor. He had a lot of scandals in his administration. A lot of people profited by it. He's the one who really took the state to the brink in terms of the integration crisis in 1960 when the schools integrated New Orleans. He was absolutely the wrong governor at the wrong time because, you know, he made call all the special sessions and everything.
There's a good book on that.
What's it called? Oh, the leadership. What you ought to, I think, be good in terms of New Orleans as well. We have it here somewhere. It's a study of the case study of the school integration in New Orleans in 1960.
Well, was Davis's, this was his second administration.
He's
was the
really
most notable actually, feature of that administration the fact that he brought racism to Louisiana politics?
He brought racism to the fore in Louisiana politics. It was there before it started during the late 50s, but he's the one who really, he got elected on a straight race. He was the only governor in the post-war era, in fact, I think the only governor in the whole 20th century that really got elected using race as a primary election vehicle. And then he had to follow through on that during the desegregation of New Orleans schools. But as far as doing it, he'll be remembered for a tremendous collection of scandals, for putting the state $60 million in the hole, and they had to have a deficit bond issue. Can you imagine having a bond issue to pay off a $60 million debt? That they couldn't figure out they were going to be in the hole to start that bid. He built a bridge. It's called the Sunshine Bridge, and the reason it's called Sunshine, not because everybody's happy over it, because there's a little town named Sunshine. A lot of people thought it was after his horse. He had a horse named Sunshine. He used to ride in some of his things. By the way, the movie was on Sunday. I wanted to watch it. He made a movie called Louisiana, which was a biography of Jimmy Davis. And starring Jimmy Davis. Jimmy Davis was the first of the movie star entertainer governors. The Constitutional Convention, Edwards has completely screwed up the tax system. Totally. You know, I live Edwards and the other people involved with him. The property tax now is not used very well at all. So in effect, the way in which it's going to come out now, I guess about 70% of all the homes in New Orleans and probably at least 100%, many parishes won't even have any tax on it.
Why?
Because they have a $10,000 limit.
$10,000 exemption?
The way it works out is that you get the maximum you can be assessed is 10% of real value. Well, you know, and they figure in the max, and then there's a maximum top of that of $30,000. Well, you know, if you get, if most homes in the state, you know, any home of 30,000 or below will be assessed and no more than $10,000, and you got all these exemptions that, that eat up most of that. So you just won't have any tax on it. You see, he's going to wipe out the property tax as a vehicle. The income, which, you know, I think it has some problems anyway with the property tax, but the income tax is the only potential growth tax, and they have that, that rate is set in the Constitution. They didn't change it. We have in our Constitution, they're keeping it in there, a $3 limit on what you pay for your license tax. You know, it's just...
You said the only two articles would have been major changes?
Acknowledges an integrated society, in effect.
Bill of Rights, yeah.
Yeah.
But the rest of it, they've pretty much retained from the other Constitution?
Well, they've made some major changes, but the special interests are so embedded into the thing now. Some of the things that they're putting into it.
What's the status of that now, Jim?
Well, they have to. They're at the end of it now. It's supposed to complete it by January 19th. Then it goes to the governor. Then the governor. In fact, the governor's going to make a speech Thursday. Why are you here? Everybody's wondering what he wants because he's been vacillating. He'll make his speech Thursday to it. You ought to try to go to that, maybe. Jack, you could probably.
In Baton Rouge.
He'll address the delegates, and there's a gallery and all that, you know.
Constitutional convention was a major plank.
Constitutional revision was a major plank in this platform.
Now, what's the point of the speech? Is he trying to influence?
Nobody knows. You see, they figured...
Isn't 90% of the work done?
Yes, but they still have the alternate proposals are going to be presented. See, the crucial thing that's coming up now is they're getting down to the end of the work. Is whether for certain controversial articles... The voters have a choice, whether they get the whole package up or down, or whether they get the whole package plus in certain articles they can put up or down. And that's the only way, the only constitution in recent years has passed was Illinois, and they had a provision for alternate proposals for certain controversial items. And the property tax is one, education, instead of eliminating, you know, coordinating and putting together one major... The master, they have a master, is supposed to make a ruling this year. It's going to be very important what's going to finally happen. And what he has to do is to rule where the coastline is. So you don't have offshore until you get off the coastline. Well, see, since Louisiana has all those eddies and everything in there, where's the coastline, you see? And the sandbars build up and go down, you know. So they have to have a line that they've decided on. And wherever that line is, you know, of course, inside is Louisiana, outside is the federal government.
So who's collecting from it now?
Well, it's supposed to go in, and all the disputed are in escrow. It's got over $1 billion, it's got, you know, at least a couple of $1 billion in escrow now. And Louisiana will get a piece of that, but not very much anymore. One time, see, in 1940, they could have settled it back in the late 40s to the benefit of Louisiana, but Leander Perez was totally opposed to it, and Earl Long backed down, couldn't work out the agreement then. And ever since then, see, Leander had the greatest influence on all that over his lifetime.
Did that man do anything good?
Leander, now he's one of the most evil men the state's ever produced in politics, really. He really, and I guess the only good maybe he did was his total employment in Plaquemines Parish. There's not a soul there without a job. I think it's illegal not to have a job in Plaquemines Parish. But all on the industries, you know, hired. He doesn't even have any taxes.
Jim, how would you proceed with this? Should we see China?
Nobody.
Iris Kelso, New Orleans. January 8th, 1974.
And all the surveys showed that, and that's why no major candidate won.
In 1971, in the governor's race, Jimmy Davis ran. The only candidate in the race, he ran fourth or fifth. Do you think that marks an end to using race as a campaign issue?
I think so. It's just, in that election we had five major candidates and only one tried it out and he failed miserably. And it's a little complicated by the fact that he was old and he was a crook. But it was just down the drain. So I think that was a warning for anybody that wanted to do it anymore.
What's the state of Republican politics in Louisiana?
I don't know, they just keep getting up off the ground and falling back. Get off the ground and fall back. And they did elect David Treen last time, so that we have a Republican congressman, but he comes up again this summer and is very likely to get beat. It was, I think, sort of a fluke that he won. And they did not have a candidate for mayor in New Orleans. They have a candidate for DA. I think he's going to draw out. And it's, I don't know. Well, you could say Watergate has had an effect on it. I just don't know how to peg that. But I just don't see the Republicans doing anything. They just, they don't get into local elections very much. And I shouldn't say statewide, because I really don't do much coverage statewide. I only work here and in Baton Rouge. But I just don't think their star is high now, though.
Who's Republican state chairman?
Jim Boyce, B-O-Y-C-E.
Here's a question I have. This is one that intrigues me a little bit. In Louisiana politics, that there seems to be certainly a recognition in Louisiana that that there is a tradition of fairly high, relatively high degree of corruption in state politics, that it's gone on for years, and a lot of people talk about reform. Why haven't the Republicans really developed as a reform party in Louisiana?
Well, they're just working uphill so much. I mean, the Democrats have had it so long, they have all the machinery, but I think our primary system is the main thing. And people don't want to register Republican because then they can't participate in the Democratic primaries, which is where the action really is. And if we ever have some kind of open primary, I think you'll see a difference. Our Democratic politicians just get furious in every election because they have to gear up and run these fantastic campaigns in the Democratic primary. And then here's some nickel and dime politician, as they see him, Republican, running against them and making them run all over again. So after every election, they always beat the Republican, but after every election they say, we're going to have open primaries.
The Republicans,
and they never do.
By primary or convention?
Primary.
And you have to register by party.
Mm-hmm. There's also the old clique business that in the past, more than now, this in crowd ran it, and they didn't really want to be successful at the polls. They just wanted to handle the patronage. And there's a lot of leftover of that. But not so much. Toledano and his crowd represent a sort of newer move.
Where does he fit philosophically?
Well, I'd be interested in your opinion when you get through. He comes all the way from the old states' rights movement. That's what he did as a young man. And he's now sort of, you really can't peg him. He is a conservative, but sort of a fluky conservative. I think he's no longer, quotes, conservative on race. He's just a more sophisticated kind of conservative.
Go back to Jack's original question about why don't they take corruption as an issue when they run with it. Would it be that the Republicans really don't see it as an issue, or that you couldn't really stir it up in the state as an issue? Is corruption just
Well, the thing is, the Democrats use it as an issue every 4 years, and they pretty well siphon it off. I mean, every...
I mean, within the primary, somebody uses the...
Yeah, you always have a... Well, this last time, everybody was a reformer, even Jimmy Davis. You see, we have a reform election every 4 years anyway. And
but nothing really seems to happen.
No.
Well, why is that? Would John Minor Wisdom have been the logical man to build a Republican Party around Louisiana?
Yeah.
And then what, did his appointment as a federal judge, in effect, siphon off the best leader, potential Republican leader? Would that be part of the story?
Yeah. He's the best leader they've ever had. In fact, he's the only real leader they've ever had. They've had second raters.
Is he a guy who could have built a Republican Party in Louisiana?
I don't think he could. I think he could have done more than anybody else. But I just think all these system obstacles are so strong. And, gee, I really don't know why they can't punch through. I can give reasons, but I really don't know why. Because this is essentially a Republican state. Except now with the increased registration of blacks, that doesn't help chances in the future. But as far as a white vote, it's essentially a Republican-oriented, even now, I think.
But it has been then the inability to develop any Republican leadership to build a party. Is that basically it?
I don't think Jesus Christ could do it in the present context. I think that...
But how about over the last 12 or 14 years? I mean, the other southern states, most of them, to varying degrees, some less and some more, but there's been some semblance of Republican Party organization in some states, quite strong, some less strong, some flukes. But it strikes me as strange that Louisiana really hasn't built what seems to be any sort of viable state Republican organization. They have almost no Republicans in the legislature. They have three or four.
One. At one time we had three. I don't really know. I guess to get at you'd have to compare us to, say, Mississippi. And
Mississippi, in a sense, I think probably has, I don't know that much about Mississippi. I think Mississippi probably has a strong Republican organization.
And they have a very good leader in Clark Reed. I don't really know.
You know, who would you suggest might have some insight on this? Talladega?
Yeah, he should, if anybody should, but I'll bet you, Dolly, he won't know any real answers either, because it's Chubbuck, too, will have done some thinking about it, but well, you really should, you should have talked with Chubbuck.
Well, we have, and we will.
Almost. As a reporter, I just don't cover Republicans except when I just have to. There's nothing happening there. I don't spend any time thinking about them. It's just like some Bush League dean. And
Treen, I know, is very persistent as a campaigner. Does he have any organizational skills?
No, not in the... a real super pro kind of sense. They put together a good organization, you know, enthusiastic volunteers and all that sort of thing, but I think he profited last time from the fact that the Democrats put up the world's worst candidate. I've never seen a cross-eyed candidate before in all my whole life. But this poor fellow was a marvelous man, but he was wall-eyed, inarticulate, and just a good old fellow, you know. And a better candidate is going to run. Dickie Bro is going to run from the legislature now. And he's already out campaigning. And I think it'll at least be a close race. He's very close to Edwards, the governor. Yes, but those people don't put up much money. You know, we don't have any E.L. Hunts and people like that. We have, well, the Republicans have gotten some financing from Willard Robertson of big Volkswagen dealer here. But that's just because he had an income tax investigation. I mean, there's things like that. You can't look to the Republicans and say they have one big financier. we don't have a lot of concentration of money, of heart money anyway, here. We have money that follows contracts and making it off the next governing office, but we don't have a lot of love money.
Even the right-wing money goes into the Democratic primary, then.
Well, I don't believe we have sources of really big right-wing money at all.
The money is money that represents vested economic interest, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore is interested in investing in, in a sense, investing in political influence.
Yeah.
And the Republicans don't have any. The rate is a poor investment.
Now, Ben Taladino spent a lot of money on his campaign. I think he spent a lot of his own money, but at any rate, he put up a well-financed campaign. And got a good vote. He got a 40% vote.
In your opinion, can a Republican get elected mayor in New Orleans?
Not with black registration. We have 36%.
So what you'd have to have is a really end up Democrats in some sort of great disarray, and Republicans put up what a moderate-type candidate. You had a situation like that, and it would take that sort of picture. They can't do it with the right wing, can they?
No. I guess it could happen with some kind of split, but.
But you don't see any Republican movement developing in the state. So you don't see it going anywhere at the moment.
Okay. Of course, we're in a quiet period now. We have a. Governor who's very popular and who will probably serve another term. We have a mayor who just got elected for a second term, so we don't have a lot of ferment right now. It might look different to me if we did. But.
When you think back over the period that you've been covering politics in the state of Baton Rouge, what are the major changes that occurred?
Well, I think the ending of race is an issue, and the we have a much higher quality kind of legislature right now. You know, more educated, more respectable, that sort of thing. And we have a strong tradition of organized politics, precinct captains, all that sort of thing. And that has broken up completely. It's all media, coalition kind of politics, modern politics. And that's come about in the last 4 years.
Don't split because of television?
I think so. You have to consider our tradition. We had the second old in the whole country. After Tammany Hall, we had the oldest political organization back in the days when politics really was a professional game and organized and everything.
Would you consider this city one of the best organized politically, let's say up until 4 years ago, in terms of precincts?
I think so.
Precinct captains and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's come apart in the last 4 years?
It's just vanished. I used to know every precinct captain and his assistant in town. That's the way I covered politics.
Even among the blacks?
Now, that's a different thing, because they don't work along those lines, block leaders and all. But right now, there's not a single white organization that's worth anything. There's not a single white political leader in the sense of a ward leader or somebody that's worth anything.
How about blacks?
And the only game in town are the blacks. The black organizations are very strong, and they are.
How many of them are there?
Oh, somebody counted them. There are about four of them that are really important, maybe five.
What are they?
Soul and Bold are the big ones, and if you're going to talk with anybody on black politics, your main man would be Nils Douglas, who is the chairman of Soul.
What is Soul?
What is it? What?
Is it an acronym for something?
Oh, I can't even remember. Something about leadership.
That's
something,
right.
But we always
United,
talk.
It's got to be United Leadership, right?
Yeah, something like that. But Soul operates in the Ninth Ward, and they are generally believed, and I think I know that they are for sale in an election. And they are really expensive. This attorney's election, the candidate paid at least $30,000 and maybe more for their endorsement. But they are really good. They do the phone bank, the door-to-door canvassing, getting people. They do a modern kind of organizational job.
Which candidate did they endorse?
They endorsed Connick, and he won. He beat Garrison.
Is that done by the use of a ticket?
Yeah.
They put together a ticket?
They have a ticket. And
but they use modern techniques in order to get phone banks and so on.
Yeah.
But is this money for, quote, buying the vote? I say, quote, buying the vote. Or is it, how much of that goes for just legitimate expenses that are involved in organizing a voter effort? To get voters to the polls and this sort of thing.
But that's always the argument. And they do spend money, with the techniques I was talking about. So they always say, yes, that's what it's for, and they spend all of it that way. But they also finance black candidates out of the money that the white candidates give them, which I consider to be somewhat worthy. But their endorsement is always so expensive, I don't believe that they spend it all.
Is it a process of bidding? I mean, how does one know what the price is to be for the endorsement?
Well, in the last election, two candidates said that they talked with the Soul people, and they said, this is our budget, can you meet it? And they could not meet one candidate could not meet their price and they endorsed the other. I don't really know how.
Do you know whether or not, though, it goes on a quote high bid basis, or do they select the candidate and go to him and say, this is it, you know, can you meet our budget? We want you if you can meet our budget.
I think we want you if is the way it goes. That's my own feeling about it. You know, they have preferences of whom they would like to back, and often, you know, there's always somebody they would not back. But they do insist on money.
But it's not a high bid.
I don't know. We always argue that out during election. I believe that it's they exercise some choice.
Tantamount to an electoral success in the city. In other words, if you've got that endorsement, that pretty well assures you that you're going to carry the city.
Well, it's never a certain thing. They won with all four of their candidates in the last election.
How many votes can they influence?
I don't know. They're really operating only one ward, which is the Ninth Ward downtown. And there are other influences. They have a sister or brother organization called COOP. Operates about the same thing, same way. And then uptown, there are a couple of good organizations run by the reverends, as they call them. And they're both good. And usually Soul and COOP on one side and the reverends on another. In the last election, Soul and COOP won with their election and won with their candidates and the reverends won.
Is the Soul thing principally based on blackness or the black ethic, and the other one based on religion?
No, Soul is I don't think it's really based on religion, in that the reverends are 50-50, or maybe 25% reverend and 75% politician. Just that they go back further and are now less effective, I think.
Is there a single leader in that group?
Reverend Davis, okay. Reverend A.L. Davis is the main one there.
Did they get together at all?
They did. They formed, all along they've always had efforts to get together. You know, the Black Unity Caucus, blah, blah. it's been almost impossible. They just can't get together, you know. But in the last election, they did get together and pulled off a beautiful victory for a guy for a parochial office. And they assigned different, I mean, it was really a united effort this time, and they did pull it off.
So if you have a clear racial issue, they get together. Is that the way you do it?
I don't think it's that, I don't think it's that clear. They, on occasion, they get together and it holds together for a little bit, and then they fall apart.
Were they united behind Lanzetta?
Well, when he first was elected, thank you. The major leaders were united behind him. The other candidate had some black support, but the major leaders were with Landry.
Is that Fitzmaurice?
Mm-hmm. Sophisticated, really big money corruption. Of course, we've always had big money corruption because of our oil business. You know, the state mineral board can make you a millionaire. And in that...
The state mineral board.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to say something in manner of...
Well, it seems to me we used to do an awful lot of stories about somebody's brother-in-law's on the payroll, you know. Now, who cares? And now, I don't think that as our news media, we're really geared up to handle what's really going on. The favors that are done in business ways. And then, of course, all the federal programs have a lot of rip-off going with them, as you see in the family health.
Why is that true in Louisiana, but it's not necessarily true other places?
No.
It's not true or it's not exposed.
I'm not sure this is an answer, but it's just what comes to my head. Landry, for instance, runs a fairly tight ship in day-to-day organization of government and the traditional functions. But somehow with him, the federal programs are the places that his black leaders get paid off, and they run it. And he just puts that on a separate category, you know, let it be. And doesn't worry about it. It's not really integrated into government as was always intended for the programs. Our federal programs have just been set aside and allowed to run themselves. Our local poverty program is a separate agency, for instance. And while there's not been a lot of stealing in that program, there's been just an awful lot of waste. And family health, $18 billion a year program, never has been audited by the state. It's just considered a separate thing. And they're not monitored.
Is that unaudited?
I don't know why.
Not monitored by the federal government as well?
What?
Is the federal government not audited and not monitored those programs?
I don't really know about family health because that's a funny kind of program. They ought to monitor our poverty program agency here, but they just really can't control a program from Washington. You just can't do it.
I'm curious, do you think there's more or less governmental corruption, say, at the local and state governments in this state than other states? How do you see it?
I don't really know because I've, I just don't have any comparison. After Agnew went, they said Maryland was notoriously corrupt, and it read just like home to me to read it.
So you don't think Louisiana is atypical? You think what goes on here may go on in other states as well?
I imagine it does. But you see, I just don't know in depth the organization of any. I'm always shocked when I go back to Mississippi and see the local corruption. It's just blatant, open. I can't believe it. In some ways, we have a lot of protections against, a lot of legal attempted protections against corruption because of our tradition, you know. We have the old swing between reform and longs back when the longs were high. And the longs would get elected and then they would be very corrupt and the reformers would come in and they'd pass lots of laws against, you know, trying to stop corruption. And in many ways, we have setups that prevent corruption that other states don't. For instance, we have more voting machines. We have fairly stiff bid laws. We have strong civil service. Those things that have come in a counter-corruption move that we've had. So I don't know. I don't think our city government is corrupt, for instance. I don't think it's as sound as you as I mean.
We see open and blatant corruption in Mississippi, where we haven't been yet, but we'll be going. But what are some examples there?
Well, I'm from Mississippi, and I know more about it at the local level, like the board of supervisors and whatnot. They just openly get kickbacks on everything they do, and they expect it, and they don't mind telling you about it.
Where did examples?
Well, my little town is Philadelphia, Mississippi. But I read Bill Miner's column out of Jackson. He's, I think, the best reporter up there. And he's always having stories about road grading machinery. Every board of supervisors in the state is on the payroll for them, and that's okay. It's just always one story after another. Of course, Mississippians think our politics is so terrible. I suspect there's more. It's just an unsophisticated kind of corruption up there. They really think it's all right. But.
Well, it seems more sophisticated here, or less of it?
Well, at least they know enough here to deny it. Like in Mississippi, a member of the Board of Supervisors, will just tell you, yeah. It's my commission on the road grading machinery. You'll say that at the local cafe drinking coffee and all the men will say, yeah, well, that's the way you do business. But it's just very funny.
Is the key to it in both states, the fact that public officials are paid so little? Salaries are low? No salaries are factors?
I don't think so. And I wish I knew enough to argue that ours is no more corrupt than anybody else. Because I just think any time you have that concentration of money and power, you'll have somebody grabbing it. But for instance, our government gets $25,000 a year. And I don't see where it'd make any difference. He says that covers his clothes budget. He says, I couldn't dress on $25,000 a year. Our governor's terrific. You need to see him. Just recently, we had a thing about the architects making campaign contributions, and the only architects who get contracts, of course, are the ones who contribute. And he just flat admitted, yeah, of course that's true. I mean, who do you think I'm going to give architectural contracts to, my enemies? And he detailed how much he said they all got. Was, you know, not embarrassed at all about it.
You don't think that's atypical? Other governors would say the same thing?
Well, I think that relates to a special personality thing of this governor. I've never known any previous governor to admit it like that.
Did the press get all over him for that, or let it go?
No, we kind of liked it. I did.
You mean the candor of it?
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I'm jaded. I have become like those police reporters who start thinking they're policemen. But I can't imagine a system where... I think the guys have got to get money someplace. If you're going to set a guy up with having to spend $1 million to run for governor, that money's got to be paid up somewhere, or some other way.
Why do you think it's so exorbitant to run for governor in this state, say 4 million people, it takes $1 million to run in a primary? Why is it so much higher here than other states?
We have such fierce contests. And I think that, again, is because there's so much money to be made here in contrast to some of the southern states. Everybody wants
to... You mean because of the state government decisions?
Mm-hmm.
Basically in terms of minerals and mineral board?
Yeah, and then, well, all the things. Highways and all of that sort of thing. But there's also such a strong political tradition here. Really wanting to be governor, just to be governor. Politics is a great spectator sport here. We just have a stronger political tradition, I think, than some of the states. And we develop strong politicians.
Have you seen any other major political changes other than the fact of the breakdown of the white political machines, big money, politics?
What's been the effect of reapportionment?
Fantastic. It's really been great. That really is what I think basically gave us a better legislature. This legislature is just unbelievable compared to others.
What are some examples of change?
Well, it's a silly thing to look at, but just in tone and decorum, it's amazing. We used to have just, our legislature was just a riot at all times, and we've had people pulling knives on each other on the floor. They were drinking and drunk all the time, and just horseplay all the time. And now it's really a little Lord Fauntleroy outfit, except occasionally late at night they all get drunk. But more importantly, we have some legislators who really, we begin to get those legislators that specialize in things, you know, like one will know the property tax and the other. More issue-oriented legislation, too. Whereas usually it was just a whole, there was nothing but a game. The governor presented legislation and the legislature broke into two groups and either worked with him or fought him and traded off. But now we have the governor in complete control of the legislature, but he doesn't buy them. I think he intimidates them with his own political power, but it's not an out-and-out money exchange with him.
Do you see the legislature getting more power?
I did. I thought when I saw this new legislature come in, now these guys are not gonna just sit around, but I have seen Edwards just get complete control of it. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing because I think his legislative program has been good. And they've gone along. I don't think they would go along with him on a really bad program. But no, I don't see them getting more power.
You do think the quality of the legislators themselves has improved as a result of reapportionment?
Oh, it's amazing. And we, out of reapportionment, we got 8 black legislators, and that's been a good thing.
Has that made a difference? Any substantive changes?
Well, it's a funny thing. They have more influence than their numbers. because other legislators played to their black constituencies through these guys, and they feel that they haven't accomplished anything. I do.
Are you in both houses?
Mm-mm. Eight in the House of Representatives.
None in the Senate?
No.
Who would be the most influential of the black legislators?
Well, the most influential is Alphonse Jackson, but he's not here. He's in, what is it? Shreveport, I believe. But here, and the man easiest to get to and to talk with is Louis Charbonneau, who is a funeral director enlisted in the phone book. It's one of the clubs, the group that runs things.
Jackson, because of his seriousness, is taken more seriously?
Yeah. Louis, Louis is sort of a kid in some ways, you know.
How does New Orleans make him?
Well, New Orleans people are just different from over the state. It's maybe the urban versus rural sort of thing, but
more fun over there.
Yeah, that's one thing, but that was so easy I didn't want to say it first. But that's it. But I just don't know what else. At any rate, you'll find Charbonneau fun. Bill Lynch in Baton Rouge, he has a